the bulk of our fires this year, at least from the DNRC's perspective, were right here in Missoula County, kind of as far away as Phillipsburg, which kicked things off in May, and then absolutely stuff going on in and around the Missoula area, Arleigh, Frenchtown, Lolo, and Clinton. So it seemed very concentrated in this area.
Why is that? Was it a little drier around here, or just luck of the lightning draw? What?
Luck of the lightning draw is probably a good way to put it. We had predictive services had been really concerned about more the southern part of Montana, the Dillon area, and Butte, because of the dryness of the fuels in those areas. Missoula wasn't really on the radar for receiving anything extraordinary, but they always have the caveat in there that a lot of it just depends on where the lightning falls. And, of course, we always have human-caused fires that we're concerned about, but it seemed like in this area, especially with some of the more recent big fires, in particular the Lolo complex, it was lightning. The number of fires we had was pretty consistent, maybe a few more as compared to last year and 2011. So with the Missoula unit, we had the Mill Creek, that was 700 acres. Nimrod was over 600. The Schoolhouse, which of course became part of the Lolo Creek complex, the Miller Creek fire, and then we assisted with the Duncan Drive, the one that was lightning struck power pole. Mm. That was the city's fire, but we assisted. And so within the rest of our protection, Rumsey Gulch out in Phillipsburg was the only other fire that the Southwestern Land Office had that was over 100 acres.
The season started off tragically in Arizona with the death of 19 firefighters at the Yarnell Hill incident. That had to be on the tops of every ground pounder and fire manager in the country. Do you think an event like that affects firefighting, makes crews and bosses a little more, conservative in their approach to fighting fire?
I don't know about conservative, but I think it definitely makes us more thoughtful. And I really hope that there becomes a good dialogue over this winter and the next couple of years. I'm very curious to see what will happen here in the future with regard to firefighting. I think, you know, just kind of my personal opinion, it's worth looking into where we're putting people and for what purposes. It's extremely expensive. Firefighting can be extremely effective. Heavy air tankers and hotshot crews and these highly skilled, highly trained, really experienced people, but there's no silver bullet. Having more air tankers is not a silver bullet answer for something like that. And so I hope that there is a national dialogue and that we do start looking at how we're doing things and how we can work together with homeowners and with folks who live in the urban interface to make firefighting safer.
Boy, that's, as you say, a very difficult dialogue. Is that dialogue being had already in the halls of various state federal agencies, do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of things that have been written, and hopefully you've taken some time to read the Yarnell incident report. In fact, I was just reading an article in Wildfire Magazine, which is published by the International Association of Wildland Fire, talking about this sort of thing and just wanting to start asking those questions and looking at, okay, what next? This is not the first big tragedy, obviously. There was Mann Gulch. People have been losing their lives in wildland fires for a long time. And so the national dialogue, I think, will be very interesting. And, you know, I know that it is something that both within our agency, the DNRC here, and then the various incident management teams that came through Missoula County, it was touched on almost daily, like the discussion of, hey, we're not here to sacrifice people's lives for homes.
You know, Ms. Super, we of course hear about the big fires, but we hardly ever hear about all those little incidents that initial attack crews snuff out. And there were a lot of those this year, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, with the Southwestern Land Office, we responded to almost 200 fire reports. 97% of those were caught at 10 acres or less. And really, I would say the bulk of those were caught at 1 acre or less. Most of them rarely get above a tenth or a quarter acre. And so there's a lot of activity that firefighters are doing every year that people don't really ever hear about. It's interesting to be a part of, and it's interesting to watch. And, you know, a big part of my job is working with the public to prevent unnecessary human-caused fires. And so, you know, when you're looking at going camping or you want to have a burn pile where you're trying to do some fuels reduction work around your house, just take a few extra minutes when you think that fire is out and really stir into it, put water on it, put your hands into it, and make sure that it's actually out.
Late in the season, things were rocking and rolling, and then we'd read these stories you and your colleagues would tell us in the media about people who would go camping, they would light their campfires, and they would just forget about them, basically. Barely put them out, in some cases, not even put them out, and walk away. That's got to be frustrating for you all.
It can be very frustrating, but I can also understand when most people are looking at a campfire, you know, and maybe they get up early and they have their fire and they're looking at it and it's calm, it's quiet, it's relatively cool in the morning. And then, of course, we've got higher relative humidities. The fire may not look like it's doing much. You know, there might be some hot coals left, and I think a lot of times people maybe, I hope that they're not just being negligent. I would always try and give people the benefit of the doubt that they just think, well, it's going to go out. And a lot of times it does, but not always. And you can always have a puff of wind come up and blow hot embers into dry grass, and conditions are vastly different at 2 or 3 in the afternoon than they are at 8 o'clock in the morning. Some of it is just sort of that educational process and helping people to understand, and firefighters have to learn that as well. I mean, I remember being a firefighter and sitting around a fire that was maybe an acre in size, there were four of us there, and thinking, well, this is a big waste of time, this fire's out, and then glancing across the fire 20 feet away from me, and there's a little puff of smoke that we had missed. And so it's, I mean, that's a good lesson, and all young firefighters go through that, and all of us learn at some level to make sure that something's out. You really do have to get down into the dirt and put your hands in the fire and make sure that it is dead out.
Yeah. Last question, Cindy, and that is, we are now in fall. Winter's fast approaching. The snow will be flying soon, and we're all going to forget about wildfires for a while, but they, of course, will be back. What can, what should people in that rural-urban interface be thinking about now that they have a little bit of elbow room?
Absolutely great question, you know, and of course, I would hope that people don't forget about fires, but I understand there's a lot of demands on people's time and their energy. And so what we've been telling people on the various urban interface fires that I've had the pleasure of doing fire information for all summer is that the fire that you can see is not necessarily the one that you have to worry about. This is Western Montana. There will always be wildland fire. It's unreasonable to expect that we can always have somebody there to immediately protect you and your home. And so people need to have a plan. It's very basic. I understand that it's difficult to do. There are resources to help people everywhere from, you know, a single home with, you know, one or two trees or barely any acreage should be paying attention to what they would do in case they're evacuated. And if people have 10 acres or 50 acres or 100 acres, there's programs in place to help with fuels reduction and even just people who can come out and advise you on some options and alternatives that you can, how you can make your forest more healthy, not just for wildland fire, but things like mountain pine beetle or wind damage, all sorts of different things that can damage your timberlands. So people should visit firesafemt.org is a good place to start. Also, we have a program that we're starting to promote, which is the Ready, Set, Go, and that is handled through the local fire departments. And people can always call their local DNRC office or fire department or the Forest Service for help.
Cindy Super of the Montana DNRC, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for your excellent information when things are rocking and rolling in the summertime. And on behalf, I think, of so many people, thank you to the men and women who put it all on the line during the height of fire season to keep us and our property and our animals safe. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ed. Have a great day.